Welcome to One Question with Pastor Adam. And I'm Adam. And hey, I'm pastor to believers and doubters, to unfaithful Christians and faithful atheists. And my friends, Jesus was not afraid of questions, and neither are we here at One Question with Pastor Adam. So we are discussing questions about religion and faith and culture and current events. And if you have questions that you would like to discuss with me here on the show, you can do that by putting questions in the comment section on the live show or sending me questions over social media, whatever. It's all good. I tried doing this just a little bit ago and I didn't have sound. And Melanie said, dude, you don't have sound. And so here's Melanie saying, we got sound. So thank you, Melanie. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for you, Melanie. I'm so glad. So anyway, yeah, if you've got questions, put them in the chat section. If you've got comments or questions about today's topic, put that in the chat section and I will bring it in. And you can also keep up to date on all One Question episodes. This is season 3 episode. I don't know what we're on, 10 maybe. So if you want to catch up with previous One Questions, you can do that on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. But today we got to talk about guns, because we have a gun problem in the United States. And this is last week we had a mass shooting in Buffalo. Of course, all of these mass shootings are tragic, but did you know that was our 198th mass shooting here in the United States in this year? 198. Now, I think a mass shooting is defined as a shooting where 4 or more people are injured or killed. And we've had 198 of them in the United States. I haven't heard of 198 of them, and you probably haven't either, in part because this, I don't want to say this has become normal, but this is the United States. This is the country that we live in, and I want to talk about it some more. And obviously, there has been a lot of talk, important talk, about the white supremacy that goes along with the shooting in Buffalo and that is going along with a lot of the shootings, maybe most of the shootings that are happening in the United States. And I want to focus today on guns. And so I put in the chat section, I would love for you to watch this. I put in the chat section an interview that I did a couple of years ago with Christian Picciolini. Christian Picciolini is a former leader of a white supremacist group. I think it was one of the Nazi groups in Chicago. And he and I talk about white supremacy in the United States, how he got involved in white supremacy groups, how he got indoctrinated. This was in the 90s, and how he got out of it, and how people who actually he hated loved him out of being a white supremacist. He was working at a record store and met black people and brown people and gay people were coming in to buy things from the store and treating him as a human being. And he was like, how can I hate these people when they love me? Man, I don't know all the solutions to how to combat white supremacy, and there are far more solutions than that, but that was part of Christian's story, and I linked to it in the chat section here. I'm going to try to post it as a special bonus on the podcast over on iTunes and wherever you listen to podcasts too. That is a crucial element of the Buffalo story and of a lot of stories. White supremacy is the terrorism that we need to be most concerned about in the United States. Homegrown white supremacy terrorism is the number one terrorist threat in the United States. So when certain politicians say, we need to keep the brown people out of the United States, whether they're Muslims or from South America, they're deflecting. They're they are deflecting and they're telling us lies, because the number one problem is homegrown white supremacy terrorism. If you want to hear more about that, I invite you to check out the show with Christian Picciolini. He is fantastic. He is now dedicating his life to getting white supremacists out of white supremacy movements, including in the online sphere. So he and I talk about that. He's got two really great books out about his story. They're on my bookshelf. I should have brought them over so I could show them to you, but Christian, I'm sorry. So anyway, check those out. You can Google them and find them there. But I want to talk about guns, because we've had 198 mass shootings this year. The U.S. has the highest percentage of guns in the world. We are 4% of the world population, but we have 42% of privately held weapons. Whew, I'm going to throw some more statistics at you, because this is the problem, major problem facing the United States. We have 29 murders with guns per million people. That is second in industrialized nations to Switzerland, which has 7. We have 6 times the gun murder rate of Canada. We have 120 guns per 100 people. We have more guns in the United States than we have people in the United States. Yemen is second with 52 guns per 100 people. The countries worldwide with the highest total gun deaths in 2019 go like this. Brazil is number one, then the United States, Venezuela, Mexico, India, Colombia, the Philippines, and Guatemala. Make America great again. There are more licensed gun stores in the United States than there are grocery stores. Did you know that? There are more gun stores in the United States than McDonald's, Starbucks, and Subway's combined. And that doesn't include the unlicensed gun sellers who can sell to anyone, including anyone online. The trend in the United States in some ways is good, because fewer people are owning guns during the last decade. But the people who own guns own more guns. And so that's why we have more guns in the United States than we do people. Research shows that more guns equals more deaths. In the U.S., the states with the highest gun ownership rate have the highest gun death rates. The states within the United States that have more guns have more gun death rates. Alaska has about 60% gun ownership rate and has the highest gun rates per gun deaths per 100,000 people at 20. Louisiana, Alabama, Wyoming, Arkansas, Idaho, among other states, fall into this horrific category. On average, the United States, as I've been saying, has 120 guns per 100 people and about 12 murders per 100,000 people. Now, some like the NRA say that the U.S. simply has more crime than other countries. And so they will say that the problem in the United States is not a gun problem, but a crime problem. The problem with this argument is that the United States has, on average, the same amount of crime as most any other country in the world. The problem is that the United States has crime that is far more lethal than other countries, because we have more guns. We have easier access to guns. For example, the crime rate in New York and in London is similar. But a crime rate in New York is 54% as deadly as London. Now, New York has strict gun laws, and that, I think, is a good thing. We're going to see why, I think, in a bit. The problem is that other states, including states in the South, have easy access to guns and bring those guns illegally into New York. This is dubbed as the Iron Pipeline system. where iron guns are brought up to New York, where you can get them. This is why we need some federal movement on gun control, so that states that have restrictions on guns don't have these guns coming from other states into their states. So, mass shootings. I mentioned that there's been 198 mass shootings this year in the United States. That's as of May 15th. That is 10 mass shootings a week. 2021, last year, had 693 mass shootings. This level of mass shootings only happens here in the United States. And these mass shootings are horrific, and they deserve our attention. And here is a factor in this gun conversation that often gets left out. The U.S. has 38,000 deaths from guns a year. More than 24,000 of those deaths are suicides. Suicides make up 3 in every 5 gun deaths here in the United States. And gun suicide tends to always be deadly. 64 Americans die from gun suicide every day. About half of white men in the United States own guns. About 25% of non-white men own guns. White men account for nearly 70% of the suicide rate. This is largely because white men are the highest percentage of gun owners. We have seen in the last year that white men are dying at younger ages. And a major reason for that is because white men own the most guns. They have easier access to guns, and tragically, that means they have an easier capability of committing suicide. Think about it like this as well. We've had a lot of talk about policing in the United States, and that is important. There's a lot of police reform, even police abolition talk happening. These are all important conversations that we need to be having. And here's one of the issues when it comes to guns. Many police live in fear of encountering someone with a gun. And the more research I do, the more I realize, can you blame them for that? Because there are so many guns in the United States. In fact, studies show that states with the most privately owned guns have the highest rate of police shootings. Police are anticipating that people will have guns. And they may be right, because there are so many guns here in the United States. This affects police fear, and that they will be shot, and so they end up shooting first. Obviously, racism and inadequate training play huge roles in policing, and we need to talk about that a lot more. More studies need to be shown on this, but if anyone really believes that blue lives matter, they should be the first to support stricter gun policies. Can I get an amen in the chat section for that? If you really believe that blue lives matter, then you had better be on the front lines of getting stricter gun laws. What are some solutions to this? The NRA, you may have heard, often blames gun violence on mental illness. So their solution is that we need to heal mental illness. Of course we need to do that. But here's the problem with this argument. Those of us who struggle with mental illness, mental health, are far more likely to suffer violence, including gun violence, than commit violence. those of us who suffer with mental illness are far more likely to suffer from violence, including gun violence, than inflict gun violence. That is a trope. It is a lie from the NRA. And if the NRA is serious about mental illness and mental wellness, then they need to be on the front lines of making sure that everybody has access to universal healthcare, including universal mental healthcare. Okay, NRA, let's do that if you're serious. The NRA also says that a solution to gun violence is merely making sure there are more guns. Just give everybody a gun. The problem with this is that more guns lead to more gun violence. They believe in the myth that the solution to a bad guy with a gun is to have a good guy with a gun. But this is a myth because not only do more guns lead to more deaths, but in multiple simulations and in real life situations, we see that when more people with guns are placed with an active shooter, it is likely to create more problems and escalate the situation and lead to more and more deaths. Even people who are trained, when they get into these situations, end up having so many stressors inside of them that they escalate the situation, making it worse than making it better. That's what we know about the good guy with a gun versus the bad guy with a gun myth. Whenever you try to be a hero in these situations, it makes it worse. The NRA also blames shootings and violence with guns on violent video games. But Japan has far more many violent video games than the United States, and it has far fewer gun murders than the United States. In fact, last year, there were only 17 firearm incidents. Actually, that was the year 2020 in Japan. This problem is a problem in the United States. It is unique to the United States, and we need to find ways to deal with it. The NRA tries to stoke fear in gun owners that we're going to take your guns away. But that's not the case. They say that Democrats are trying to take your guns away. Democrats are feckless. They're ineffective when it comes to this issue. They've been trying to make changes on this issue for the last many decades and can't move the needle, or having a very difficult time moving the needle at all. They're not trying to take your guns away. We're trying to make this country safer. We're seeing these shootings happening all the time. We're seeing suicides happening more and more. These suicides often happen because for 20 minutes, somebody is having this crisis in their lives. And because they have easy access to a lethal weapon, they end up killing themselves. And if they didn't have access to that lethal weapon, they would still be here. And we could get them help. White men typically in the United States, and especially white men, have a crisis of manhood because we can't call out for help because we've been told that calling out for help makes us weak. And so what do? Many of us end up ending our lives because we don't know how to manage the turmoil that is inside of us. So this affects us on so many levels. When it comes to mass shooters, and when it comes to suicide. And these are things that we need to talk about. Easy access to guns allows us to have these tragic events that we hear about frequently and that we don't hear about frequently, from mass shootings all the way to suicides. What is the solution? I would love to hear your thoughts on the solution. There is hope. There is hope, because the good news is that there are things that we can do about this. The good news is the vast majority of people in the United States want stricter gun regulations. The good news is that Republicans and Democrats agree that we should bar gun purchases by people on no-fly watch lists. Vast majority of Democrats and Republicans want universal background checks for private sales at gun shows. We agree about banning assault-style weapons, creating a federal database to track guns. The majority of Americans also support banning high-capacity magazines and requiring a license before owning a gun. In some ways, a good step forward might be to treat guns like we treat cars. You got to get a license. You got to take the test. You got to drive the car. You got to go through the classes. You got to do these things in order to have a gun. Personally, I don't want us to have guns. I want, if somebody wants to, like, I was reading an article earlier and it said that gun owners want to take their guns out to driving ranges. Well, go to not a driving range, that's golf. A gun range. Well, let's have guns at gun ranges. And you can rent your gun, take it to the gun range and shoot things. You don't need a gun at your house in order to take it to a gun range. You just go to the gun range and get the gun. So, nobody's coming after somebody's, well, Democrats aren't coming after people's Second Amendment rights. We're just trying to make it safer. So, those are some things that we can do together to create stricter gun regulations and make us all safer. We have to do this on a federal level so that we're all playing the same game when it comes to this. We're all on the same level. Now, as a pastor, I want to talk a little bit theologically about this, because, you know, Christian white nationalism often disguises itself as Christian. And often tries to look to biblical passages to say, yeah, this means we should own a gun. The biggest issue in the Bible is the biggest issue in the United States. You might call it violence. How are we going to deal with violence? You might call it hatred. You might call it othering people. Whatever it is that you call it, the Bible reveals that we can move. Humans can move to violence really, really fast. In fact, we see this in the book of Genesis, where the first murder happens with the children of the first human beings. Within one generation, Cain kills his brother Abel out of jealousy. And Cain is afraid that this is going to start a cycle of violence. And so God puts the mark of Cain on him to stop the cycle of violence. Theologically speaking, God wants to stop the cycle of violence. From a human point of view, what Genesis is getting at is telling us the danger of being human is the violence that we commit against one another. Physical violence, emotional, spiritual violence, this all is there. And it's all things that we need to take accountability for. So God comes to Cain and says, where's your brother? And Cain says, am I my brother's keeper? And what's the answer to that? Yes, you are your brother's keeper. We are each other's keeper. We are responsible for one another. God says to Cain, sin is lurking at your door and you must master it. Which means don't kill your brother. Don't use this weapon to kill another person. These are the things that you must master. As people who, I want to take the Bible seriously, as anyone who believes in the Bible, you got to do this. This is what the Bible is getting at. This is non-violence that we are seeing here at the beginning of the Bible. And we see how when we start acting out in violence, even justifying it in the name of God, how it goes against the image of God that we are all created in. Now, Cain kills his brother Abel, and this is in chapter 4 of Genesis, and by chapter 5 of Genesis, you have this fifth descendant of Cain named Lamech, and Lamech says this: I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for striking me. If Cain is avenged sevenfold, truly Lamech 70-fold. This is Lamech, a descendant of Cain, who promises to get revenge on others. He lives his life by seeking revenge against others. If someone wounds me, I'm going to teach them a lesson, and I'm going to teach their friends a lesson. I'm going to teach their family a lesson. I'm going to kill that person. If someone insults me, I'm going after them. You may have heard this from a recent president. If someone screws you, you screw them harder. That's the mentality of Lamech. Lamech is the bad guy in this story for Christians and for Jews. This is not the model that we are supposed to be following. And yet, Lamech is precisely the model that many of us follow. The one who wants revenge, the one who seeks revenge. You hit me, I'm going to hit you back harder. And so where is this going to lead us? It's going to lead us to Genesis chapter 6, where we have the flood narrative. Now, many people miss a large part of this flood narrative and make it theological. Let's look at the human aspect of this story. I think that's where we're going to find the truth in this story. What is the human aspect of this story? The story says that God looks at the world and it was wicked. Why was it wicked? Because it was full of violence. People using weapons against one another, people hitting, being violent against one another. And this is the flood of violence that we are seeing happening within the first six chapters of the Bible. This is the warning that the Bible gives us right at the beginning, that we humans are flooding the earth with violence and we are going to destroy one another. You get very dark and apocalyptic in the Bible within the first six chapters. And what is the point? The point of all of this is that we take responsibility for the sin, the violence that is within us, that we don't act out on it, on that desire for revenge, on that desire for violence. Instead, we replace it with nonviolence, we replace it with forgiveness. This is the stream of the stream that we find in the Bible, where it has a revelation. There are two strands within the Bible. I get this from Brad Jerzak. One strand in the Bible is religion, human trying to understand God, how we act with one another, and that is often. That is often a violent strand. The other strand is a strand of revelation. It's a strand of non-violent love. And how do we as Christians see that strand? How do we interpret that strand? How is it shown to us? Well, we see it in many places in the Old Testament. There's this story, ultimately we see it in Christ. But there's this story in the Bible of two brothers, Jacob and Esau. Jacob steals his brother's Esau's birthright. Esau says that he's going to get revenge. This is Lamech, where Esau is going, right? Just told you the story of Lamech, how he wants like 77-fold revenge, right? And or maybe it's 70-fold revenge, whatever. So Lamech promises he's going to get all of this revenge on people. Esau promises to get revenge on his brother, not by stealing his birthright back, but by killing his brother, Jacob. So Jacob says, oh crap, and he runs away from his brother because he doesn't want to get killed. Well, they meet many, many years later, and Jacob is afraid that his brother is still wanting revenge. And they end up meeting many years later when they're older. Esau's life has gone really well. He's got a lot of things. He's a happy guy. Jacob has done pretty well. And they meet later on, and Jacob ends up sending him all of these gifts saying, hey, I'm really sorry for what I did. Esau doesn't hold it against him. Esau comes up and embraces him. There's this act of forgiveness. And Jacob says to Esau, in you, I see the face of God. That's revelation. That's the difference between religion, which is a human striving, which is often connected with violence in the name of God, and revelation. Revelation is seeing the face of God in the one who offers forgiveness. As Christians, we see this strand throughout the Hebrew scriptures, and we ultimately see it in Jesus. You notice where Lamech says, I'm going to get revenge 70-fold. Well, what does Jesus say? Jesus goes back to Lamech and says, forgive 70-fold. Seven times 70 times, forgive. Whereas Lamech, the number seven, means like complete or ultimate, right? Whereas Lamech says, promises to get revenge, ultimate revenge. Jesus says, ultimate forgiveness. Go in a different direction. That's where you're going to find God. Now, there are some who say that Jesus actually teaches us to carry swords and carry weapons just in case we need them for self-defense. This goes against the way that Jesus lived his life, because he never carried a sword. He never lifted the sword to defend himself. But one of the quotes that people use is from Luke chapter 22, where Jesus says, when I sent you to his disciples, when I sent you out with a purse or bag or sandals, did you lack anything? They said, no, not a thing. Jesus then says to them, but now the one who has a purse must take it, and likewise a bag, and the one who has no sword must sell his cloak and buy one. Well, there you go, many Christians say. Jesus says we have to carry our swords, and today our swords are guns. So we have to carry our guns, and Jesus allows us to carry our guns. In fact, he commands us to carry our guns. But that's not what Jesus is saying, right? Why does Jesus say to his disciples at this time that they are to get swords? Is it to protect themselves? Is it to use their swords violently against somebody who might come against them in self-defense? No, that's not what Jesus says. He explains this by saying, for I tell you, this scripture must be fulfilled in me. And he was counted among the lawless. Why do the disciples, why does Jesus want the disciples to carry swords as Jesus is going to the cross now? So that the disciples will be counted among the lawless. This is to fulfill a scripture that Jesus would be counted among the lawless. What does this tell us? Carrying swords, carrying weapons for Jesus is lawless. Now, I don't want to follow all laws, right? But Jesus here is telling them that carrying a sword is going to make them be counted among the people who were responsible for killing him, among the lawless. This is not a good thing that the disciples are going to be doing, but it is to fulfill a scripture. So you have to notice when Jesus says to these specific disciples that they need to get swords, it is not to protect themselves. It is not to defend themselves against their enemies. It is so that they will be counted among the lawless. In fact, we get more of this later on in Luke chapter 22. Why? Because right after Jesus tells them to carry swords, he is arrested. And in Luke 22, one of the people who arrests him, or one of his disciples says, "Lord, shall we strike these people with a sword?" Then one of them struck the slave of the high priest and cut off his ear. So if Jesus was telling them to carry swords in order to protect themselves from the bad guys, this is the right time to do it. This is the interpretation that the disciples have of Jesus' statement to go carry swords. And it's the wrong interpretation to use those swords in violence to protect themselves. Why? Because Jesus says, "No more of this." And then he touched the man's ear and healed him. What does Jesus do in the face of violence with swords, the guns of the ancient world? He heals people, including people who are his enemies, who are trying to arrest him and kill him. What does Jesus do in the face of violence, the most anti-violent thing that you can think of? He heals his enemies. That's what Christianity is about. Not using swords or weapons or guns or tanks or whatever to kill our enemies, but to love our enemies, to care for them, to heal them when it is necessary. That is what it means to follow Jesus. And hey, I'm not telling you that I'm good at this, right? I'm not. That's why I need a group of people to help hold me accountable to this vision that Jesus is getting at. So, these are my thoughts. And okay, so I wanted to leave you with one last look at the Bible. We started with Genesis, and I wanted to end with Revelation, because Revelation, the book of Revelation, is a weird, wacky book. That is for sure. So it was written during a time of persecution when Christians could have picked up their swords and tried to kill off the Roman Empire, the people who were persecuting them. But they didn't. They didn't. And the book of Revelation is a fairly violent book. But what you need to recognize in the book of Revelation is that all of the violence on a human level is committed by non-followers of the way. At this time, non-followers of Christ. Why? Because the book of Revelation knew that Christians were supposed to stay non-violent in a violent world. And here is where we get that. In the book of Revelation chapter 13, there is one ethic from a Christian point of view that runs throughout the book of Revelation, and that is this. Let anyone, in chapter 13, verse 9 through 10, let anyone who has an ear listen. If you are to be taken captive, can I do a joke with you? Okay. This is what the NRA wants you to hear. This is what the NRA wishes the book of Revelation said. Let anyone who has an ear listen. If you are to be taken captive, you must take your sword and try to kill the people who are trying to take you captive. Because a good guy with a sword should defeat a bad guy with a sword, right? That's not what it says. No, that's not what it says. It says this, let anyone who has an ear listen. If you are to be taken captive, into captivity you go. If you kill with the sword you must be killed. Here is a call for the endurance and the faith of the saints. The ethic when it comes to weapons throughout the New Testament is that if you are going to be using a weapon, with that weapon, you must be killed. This is a warning about weapons, about swords, about guns, about whatever weapons we might try to pick up. In the name of self-defense, in the name of power, in the name of white supremacy, whatever it is that you might call it, justify it. The biblical, the New Testament ethic is to put your sword down, because those who live by the sword will die by the sword. That includes guns. So, did you like that there at the end? Okay, so we've got some comments here. Let's go to some comments. And I want to tell you this. I should have told you this at the beginning. I have family members who I love dearly who have guns. I have friends that I love dearly who own guns too. And I'm not here to judge them. I don't know what they would do with their guns. I don't know if a lot of them have guns for hunting, for going to the driving range. They don't have a desire to use their guns in violence against other people. I don't even think some of them would use their guns really in self-defense either. They've got them locked away. I think that they're doing really, I love them. And I appreciate the way that they relate. This is going to sound really weird coming out of my mouth. I appreciate the way that they relate to their guns. That sounds really weird. I appreciate the way that they own their guns. That's probably a better way to put it. So anyway, let's get to some comments and see. I am clearly no expert on this, but I do think that there is hope that we can do better. We can do better on many different levels in this. Luke, do having strong arm muscles count as guns? Luke, I do not have guns in my arms or in my home. Yes, Melanie, those are the right kind of guns. Private gun ownership is unconstitutional. It's supposed to be a well-regulated militia. Yes, Luke, let's talk about that Second Amendment. I think you're right. I wish I had it in front of me. I should have put it up. But it does say a well-regulated militia can own guns. So obviously there's a lot of debate about how to interpret the Second Amendment, but Luke, I'm with you on that one. Private ownership of anything is unbiblical. We're supposed to share. Yeah. Thank you for that, Luke. Good morning, Lita. Good to see you. Good afternoon there in Rhode Island. Melanie. The solution is well-regulated public armories. Yep, Luke, I think that's a good one. Abolish the military, outlaw the NRA. All right, let's go. Melanie, appreciating all of these statistics. Thank you, Melanie. If you're interested in more statistics, I got a lot of those from Vox.com. So if you're interested in doing more research on this, you can go just Google Vox.com and Google gun problem in America. That'll bring up a lot of stuff. And well, here you go. The amount, Luke says, the amount of guns in the U.S. could probably be melted into materials for new roads and buildings. Luke is, you are obviously reminding me of Isaiah chapter 2. And is it Micah? Does Micah also say this? I think it's Micah. The prophets, Isaiah, and I believe it's Micah, say that look to the day when we turn our swords into plowshares and our spears into pruning hooks. This is the vision of the prophets. It's the vision of the prophet Luke, who is here too, that we might be able to turn our guns into things that are actually useful for us, new roads and buildings. Now, when the prophets say this, they are not primarily talking about something that will happen into the future. Oftentimes it's future tense, but the prophetic vision of the biblical prophets are about the future entering into the present. So when they say something like the day will come or one day we will turn our swords into plowshares and our spears into pruning hooks. They're challenging us to live into that day now, to not wait for a day off into the future, but to live that day right here, right now. That's the vision that they are giving us. Yes, Luke, I'm with you. I was like, how do I do this blue lives thing? I was like, if you really believe in blue lives matter, then you need to have stricter gun laws. Luke says blue lives don't matter because blue lives don't exist. Yes, that's another way to frame it too. Yeah. So Ashley says somehow other countries have mental illness also. Yes, come on with it, Ashley. Let's go. But don't have America's gun violence issues. Yes. Thank you, Ashley. Key point. Japan has guns for rent to hunt instead of gun ownership, and their gun violence is minuscule. I think that is a key solution to all of this as well. We'll see if we can ever get there in the United States, but I think that is good. Melanie, I heard a speech by Obama a while back that we're not even allowed to study gun violence and deaths like we did with car crashes, which lead to regulations that lowered car crash deaths because the NRA lobbies against allowing it. The NRA, how do I say this? should I just say it? Okay. Yeah, the NRA has a lot of power. I'm not going to say it. The NRA has a lot of power with Republicans. They give Republicans a lot of money. And, you know, you can blame Republicans for wanting a lot of money, but who wouldn't want a lot of money? That's what, in the United States, that's another issue, is that in order to run for any position, political office, you have to have a lot of money. That's also something that we need to change in the United States. And the NRA has the Republicans by the, I was going to say it, by the sensitive parts. And so the NRA is a big big problem, but also the NRA hasn't always been a big problem when it comes to this. In the 1930s, the NRA actually started off as primarily gun safety, not a gun lobby, and they actually wanted more gun regulations. Well, in the late 1960s, when there was more gun violence in the United States, they were talking about making stricter gun regulations like we're doing today as well. And that's when the NRA started saying, oh, now this is a slippery slope. They're coming to take your guns. That's a little history of the NRA. Not that it matters a whole lot, because we have to deal with the NRA that we have now. And they're causing a lot of problems with this. The good news, Melanie, is that the NRA is a minority. We have to keep reminding ourselves of this. I consider myself a progressive Christian. There are other Christians who are really loud. The NRA is really loud. They're not a lot of them, right? They're a minority. As I've been telling you, the statistics that Republicans and Democrats agree that we need to have stricter regulations, and the NRA comes in and they get loud. Well, what does that mean? We need to be louder. There was some research that I saw that said that the NRA and the few people who agree with the NRA outside of the NRA are passionate about what they believe, more passionate than what those of us who are on the other side believe. Why? Because they have something that's tangible in their hands, a gun, and they fight passionately for it. Those of us on the other side have a harder time fighting as passionately for it because we don't have something tangible in our hands. What we have now is more and more stories about gun violence, and that should give us more passion. So if we can escalate the passion, if we can escalate our voices so that we are louder, we can do this. We can do this. The NRA, I think, is much more of a paper tiger than what we give it credit for. Rue, agree. that didn't work out so well for the gentleman in the supermarket shooting this week who tried to stop the shooter. Rebecca says, blue lives just need more unlearning to then train in the way of Buddha. Well, I like the Buddha. I think the Buddha is a good model for this, Rebecca. I like that. Yep. Yes, being a police officer is a profession, not a life. It is not something that you are born into. That's why we keep saying Black Lives Matter, because that is a life. And you're exactly right. Blue lives are not a life. It's not something that you're born into. It's a profession. Thank you for that, Luke. There are complications, but it's not. It's exactly what you're getting at, Luke. So thank you very much. That's good. Yeah, Luke, that's the sad part of it, isn't it? Republicans and Democrats seem to agree on one thing, that nothing should progress on anything. Yeah, and they agree on another thing too, Luke. This is another part of this story when it comes to violence and weapons, is that this is not just on the individual level with Americans owning the most guns in the world. It is also on a national level that the one other thing that Republicans and Democrats can agree on is that we need to increase the military budget every year, right? The United States has more weapons than any other country in the world. We have far more many military bases throughout the world than any other country in the world. And we have more atomic bombs than any other country in the world. That's consistent. These two things are consistent, right? We have more guns than anywhere else in the world. We have more military. The United States has a belief in violence problem. We need to train ourselves to believe, as Rebecca is getting at earlier, in nonviolence. The Buddha, Jesus. These are all great examples of Isaiah. These are all great examples of nonviolence. We need to train ourselves in nonviolent communication, in nonviolent methods to deal with our problems. This is a key. What if the United States, here's a dream, trained ourselves from childhood on up with nonviolence, nonviolent peace methods? That would be a big deal. Josh says, my first with Pastor Adam, finally, accountability. Yes, Joshua, thank you for being here. Good to see you. Yep, we are each other's keeper. Let's see. Yeah, Joshua, good to see you. Good to see you. Let's see. Other comments. Well, thank you, Rue. Thank you. I love hearing you speak. As a non-Christian, you are the most Christian person I know. Rue, you're going to make me cry. Oh my goodness. I got a message from, I start off each episode saying that I'm a pastor to unfaithful Christians and faithful atheists. I got a message this last week because of my Satan episode on interviewing the evangelical Christian who is meeting with Satanists and talking with them. I got a Satanist telling me that I'm their pastor now. Isn't that cute? Well, it's adorable. It's so cool. So Luke, the book of Revelation is a drug trip. Yes. Heather and I were talking about that a couple days ago. So medic Jesus, come on with it, Heather. Yes. Medic Jesus, not warrior Jesus. That's the contrast. That is, I love it. Okay. Thank you for that, Raylene. Yeah. Raylene says we got Bible study on Zoom. You can check out the TikTok, all kinds of stuff. Let's see. Rue says, also kind of ironic, saying that an amendment can never be amended or changed. Yes. This, you know, there's a bit of me with the Supreme Court who is talking about changing our interpretation of the 12th Amendment? Changing it, it's the one on privacy. Changing it so that it no longer supports abortion. Well, if we're going to start messing with the amendments in the Constitution and changing interpretations, well, then the Second Amendment's on the table. That's... that's how I'm feeling about it. And all of this is up for conversation. The NRA is almost broke. Come on, Jeff, let's go. May it fold soon. Yes. Yeah, that's why the NRA is like, we give it too much power. We think it's a bigger, more powerful thing that it is. And hopefully, as Jeff says, may it fold soon. Amen, Jeff. Rue, kidding, ironic that gun advocates say the Second Amendment can't be amended. It's an amendment. Yes, 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 that's it. Yeah. Kind of kidding, not kidding. Yes. Okay. Joshua says, in my humble opinion, when we encounter people with low empathy, we must remember our humanity. I love it. Love it, Joshua. Yeah. When you encounter people with low empathy, we must remember our humanity, our shared humanity, and meet low empathy with empathy. Yeah, I love that, Joshua. Thank you, Joshua. I'm so glad that you're here. Okay, so we've got one more comment from Luke Scotus on thin ice with their legitimacy, and it's only people believing in their legitimacy that gives them any power. We'll see. Well, yeah, you're on it, Luke, as always, and we'll see what happens with SCOTUS here in the near future. Jeff says, same can be said for Congress and the executive branch too. Where are we going here in the United States? Hopefully in a place where there are far fewer guns. We will see. We will see where we are going. I am glad to be going with it on this journey with you all. Thank you, Joshua, for being here. Thank you, everybody, for being here. You can keep up with One Question with Pastor Adam wherever you listen to your podcasts. I try to be here every Thursday at 11 o'clock Pacific for the live show. If you have questions that you would like to explore with me on this podcast, you can put those in the chat section. Better to email me or send me a message over Facebook at my Pastor Adam Facebook page or the Clackamas UCC Facebook page, or send me an email. We'll try to do this all again next week, Thursday at 11 o'clock Pacific. Until then, grace and peace be with you, friends. Bye-bye.